extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Ah, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, David Goss, replacing Dr. Tom Bogart on today's show, Stefano Fusaro, not short on vibes. Welcome, Stefano.
Thank you, thank you.
Guys.
Because Tom's in England getting a medical for transfer market.
Tom has a doctorate?
Yeah, yeah.
What do we think Tom has a doctorate in besides Miller Lite?
I said this last time. Right, yeah. I handled it poorly. I should have said PhD.
He'd still be a doctor, though.
Yeah, no, I know.
Yeah, come on. Yeah. Treat the man with respect.
Yeah, for sure.
It was one of my favorite bits of all time that I wasn't here for.
And I'm so glad you enjoyed
so
it.
So now I've returned.
Doyle didn't even notice it.
I know,
it.
I've
he
returned to drive
here.
It straight into the ground in true Weeby fashion. That's how we do these things.
Domino.
It is yours. I gift it to you.
Thank you. Thank you. I do have an announcement to make. I am once again going on vacation.
Oh,
you'll have to do the second show this week without
me. Are you doing a Labor Day vacation?
Yeah, going back to Kansas City, the homeland.
Nice.
Should be good. See the family.
Do you just go to the Legacy Mall in Kansas? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's like kind of a mall to mall.
Just go to
tour.
The Nebraska.
That's the Nebraska Furniture Mart. Right. It's like a
your whole family hubs
course,
there.
Exactly.
Cool.
It's the meeting spot. Exactly. No.
Good blue lemonades over there.
You guys will have to handle that business. We are off on Labor Day, though. So we won't have a show on Labor Day. You'll have match day, it's not 29, because 29 is Wednesday. Match day 30, and then we'll go our separate ways, do our own things, and return once again later that week, which I will also be gone for.
Whoa, wow. Must be nice.
Just letting you know.
Vacation.
I'm not playing golf.
I wish I had kids.
I'm not
then
playing
you could
golf
just
a single
do whatever
time.
You want all the time.
Yes, yes. That's exactly how that works.
Yeah, definitely not, but okay, yeah.
This side of the table. Have produced children. Yes. This side of the table, living a glorious life of freedom, luxury, and decision making's all your own.
Dink.
Yes,
dual
nice.
Income, no kids.
Yeah, yeah.
Got it.
Somebody was going to have to explain that to the audience at home. All right, let's get into it. Match 28. Back for our first full slate, I guess. We had nine matches, but that didn't really feel like the full shebang. But we got it match day 28. Saturday, 13 games, then 14 games. Routed out on Sunday. What's the best non-Messi thing you saw, Dave? Because obviously we have a Messi segment coming up shortly.
We're starting with me?
Yes.
That doesn't seem fair because we, in the green room, selected this in an order. So it sounds like this is the number one thing.
The best thing I saw was Jason Russell Rowe scoring a clincher against Toronto FC. Partially because the Crew are so much fun to watch and they deserved to win that game by multiple goals. It could have been 12-0, finished 2-0. And part of it is because the development of the young players on that roster make the Crew, I think, everyone's favorite dark horse MLS Cup pick at this point. Like, this is a team that you could throw on the field. Like, they crushed Cincinnati last week. You could throw them on the field against Philadelphia. They're not going to be overawed. I could see them beating Miami if Miami makes the playoffs like 5-4. And it's because they have top end quality and because they have depth as well. The other side of that coin is that at some point Toronto have to learn their lesson, right? At some point Toronto have to tap that well of local talent and develop those guys and get them into the first team, like open that stream. Look at what Miami have done with Miami's stack now. Kramaski, Noah Allen, Ruiz, all academy kids playing significant roles. You know, the teams all over the league have figured out how to do this. Toronto have as rich a hotbed of local talent, and they do not integrate that at the level that they need to. If they still had Jason Russell Rowe, he'd be a starter for this team.
Can I add a kicker here? And this is like 18 rows down, but why not? So Patrick Schulte had the assist on that, Generation Adidas goalkeeper. That draft, Toronto had the third pick in the draft. They traded it to FC Dallas to get off Dom Dwyer's contract. So they couldn't play Jason Russell Rowe on their first team because they had guys like Dom Dwyer they were paying. Then they couldn't draft a Generation Adidas goalkeeper, which wouldn't hit your cap.
Schulte is really good, by the way.
But they don't worry because they can max out TAM goalkeepers because that doesn't cost money.
Right.
The cap doesn't exist. So it's just one of those moments where it all comes full circle.
That front office since Tim Bezbachenko left 4 years ago now, they just have been in, like, it's not even a nosedive. It's like a death spiral. And to see this team go out there and be so helpless week after week after week with no direction. For a number of reasons, that Jason Russell Rowe goal was the best thing I saw this weekend. And I really hope one of those reasons ends up being like a light goes off in TFC's front office and they realize that they have players coming up in their local academy, in their system, that can contribute at a high level for their teams.
Do we know how many losses in a row Toronto has off the top of our heads?
Ooh, it's 10. 10 in all comps.
Well done. Well done.
10 in all comps.
Yes.
The record for MLS losses in a row is, I believe, 14. I had this conversation with the great Mark Connolly on Saturday night.
14. So now we have,
and that's over the course. That's over the course of two seasons. In over the course of one season, I think the record is 12. But that was by the old Metro Stars in '99, and a couple of those were shootout losses.
I wouldn't count those personally.
Yeah.
But now the 14 over two seasons. I need a guess on this one. I'm trying to think
which team did it over the course of 2 years.
DC feels like a possibility. San Jose.
Cincinnati.
Should have known that. Yeah. Wow. Well.
I mean, just remember, because we're going to get to how bad Cincinnati, like,
should have known.
Chivas, over their decade of existence, Chivas USA's collective goal differential was like minus 105 since he got there in 2.5 years.
That's well. It's also pretty ironic that that's the first time we bring up Cincinnati in the show is talking about how bad they used to be.
Yeah, don't worry. We'll get to you. Maybe not the best thing we saw. Is that cover for you, Dave?
Yeah.
Enough cover?
I'll stick in Canada.
Got it.
And I'll go to a Toronto native who got out in Richie Larea, who's now, with the Vancouver Whitecaps, and Sam Atakube, two Canadian internationals signed. How much money can you put at the wingback position? Can they help? What will be the difference? And they went on the road. They won at Portland. Larea drew a penalty. Atakube helped set up the first goal. But, we've seen it all year. We've seen it for the last 2.5 years under Vanni Sartini. When they play with wingbacks, if they can open up the field enough, it gives space for Ryan Gaul to operate. You look at two players who are different than Julian Gressel, but also can give you high-level service from the wingback positions and connect and
that
link
ball
up.
From Atakube on the first goal.
Like that and was, then that Brian really, White just ghosting on a far post where it's like, oh, if you're going to pull the field around, now a center back has to track me all over the box and I can find my
space.
Or
he gets isolated on a fullback as he did on that goal and like he's just going to, mouse in the house kind of moment.
Can we also talk about Richie Larea when he sees a Vander defending him in the box? Yeah. He's like, that's a mark.
He
like,
completely that,
this dude's
him.
A mark. Oh, yeah. Like, yep. I got this guy. Don't worry about it. We got a penalty, boys.
He watched the Tigris
game. Exactly. He's like, will you dive in? I think you will. I've been doing this a long time, Evander.
But you missed... previous on this show when you were away, I did my favorite thing, which is reading schedules, upcoming schedules.
I know I was. You cannot imagine the amount of delight I felt, one, forcing my children to listen to Extra Time on the way to Asbury Park as Tom complained that he wasn't around to hang out with me at Asbury Park, and then for you to mention all the little intricacies within the show and to just needle me from I just had a great time.
I do love a good schedule, though. Yeah. I like a good schedule. The key is Vancouver is now on a 7-game road stand. So they won the first game at Portland, which is a 6-pointer in the West. They may have killed Portland's playoff chances already. They now are in Chicago on Wednesday. They still have to go to Toronto, which is, you would argue, a winnable game considering they have lost 10
probably
in a row
deep six at this
in
point,
all
huh?
competitions. So
under?
Just for Vancouver, it was as big a 3 points as you could get. You did it against your rival. You did it in a huge moment. And you did it with a lot of these new pieces just fitting in and the culture, or at least the confidence going in the right direction.
And you invented a new term, the road stand.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
I like it.
We're on a big road stand, boys. All right. We're going away.
Best fish tacos I ever had in my entire life were at a road stand.
Just outside, actually, just outside my last vacation in the Cape Cod region. Yeah. A lot of road stands for lobster rolls.
Can I throw this out there? And Anders can correct me if he knows this off the top of head, which he should. But I believe now, August 26th, I believe Vancouver's in the lead for the Cascadia Cup.
I think this is the you're looking at the standings here. I believe this is the most updated standings.
But this one's not updated here. August 26th.
Hmm.
Cascadia Cup, thecascadiacup.com. Call me. Let's work on something.
Let's talk to Copatejas as well. So Caps are top on 9 points. Looks like Sounders are kaput. And I think Portland just has one game left. That's Portland Sounders.
So since 2014, Vancouver has won one Cascadia Cup. So that alone would be a huge part of their season and making the postseason.
Yeah, got to do that one as
well.
They've
won a Canadian championship already. It's Vancouver, baby. That's the only market in MLS that anyone wants to talk about. Come on.
Did I hear that you saw a Vancouver Whitecaps jersey in the wild in upstate New York this
weekend? I did not. I was not there. I was told about it.
But there's lore of such things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be shocked, man. It's the buzz. Everyone's talking about them.
First of 7 games on the road. Yeah. I'm going to start doing things where if I see people with that jersey out and about in a place where I think they probably don't know what I'm talking about, I'm going to come up and just start a conversation, full bore extra
time.
They're
going to know, dude. Yeah. Vancouver fans, the most knowledgeable fans in the league. Come on.
Yeah, they're not wearing it for fashion, I guess. You're right about that. All right. Best thing I saw.
I like their kids.
Huh? No, I love them. Okay. Yeah. I figured, you know, like, you'd have to be pretty plugged in to be like, I'm going to, for fashion purposes, purchase a Vancouver Whitecaps kit and not be somewhat of a fan.
How would you open that conversation if you saw a Whitecaps fan in the middle of upstate
New
York?
If you noticed the train wreck that was the last minute and a half when we talked to himself, he'll have no problem.
No problem.
Anyone else will be involved
in the conversation. It's a monologue. All right, best thing I saw, Corey Baird, the human crab, the dancing crab, to honor the dancing bear. He's a bottom feeder. He gets his 10th goal of the season, and he's doing a crab
celebration. Oh, you think this is a Will Bruin situation?
No, I'm you know, we're trying to figure it out on the fly.
What do you mean he's a bottom feeder?
Because crabs are bottom feeders. I'm not saying he literally
trade is. It's what he's saying is their trade.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
No. I don't think he is personally, but if he's a human, I don't know what he's. What is this celebration? He scored again. Houston won 3-0. You would think RSL at home would be pretty motivated after getting knocked out of the Open Cup literally 3 days before and getting in a fight in extra time with the same team they were playing. And then they laid down at home and got worked.
Yeah, they weren't inspired.
And also, I'm trying to figure out the crab celebration still.
And there's not even any water near Salt Lake City, so
Houston is. I mean, Houston is a port city.
Galveston, great.
Galveston, baby,
great seafood. I assume
David made a really good point. We did the MLS Pass preview.
Hey, you guys, can we get a single shot here so we could cut this out later and zoom in on Doyle?
We did the MLS Pass preview for the RSL game, and David made a very good point that look, Chicho Arango is really good, but the reason Steve Cherundolo and John Thorington didn't really rate him that highly is because he doesn't do well on the repress, right? It used to be LAFC, but now RSL, when they lose possession, he doesn't help win the ball back all that well. And now with Pablo Ruiz injured and gone for the year, RSL are losing the ball more often and in worse spots. And then that is compounded by the fact that they play a 4-4-2. So it's a 2 in central midfield against Houston. They play a 4-3-3. Okay. You're outnumbered in the most crucial spot in the pitch. You go back and you watch that first goal, that Corey Baird bottom feeder goal. watch where RSL lose possession and then how easy it is for Houston to immediately turn around and get out on the run. And Brad Smith has, you know, he's an up and down player, but like if you can get him on the run, he could be an effective player. And you're not going to, backpedaling defender is not going to keep up with him in space. You know, the ball leads Smith perfectly. And then he's just able to, you know, really nice run from Corey Baird where he makes the first move inside and gets Silva to commit and then drifts to the back post. Like it's exactly how you draw it up. And I think it's something that we've seen a bunch against RSL now over the past 3 games. This is a team that had mostly, improved a lot in their rest defense earlier in the season. Feels like it's back to the drawing. They've given up 10 goals in 3 games, man. It's back to the drawing.
It's been the issue for the last 3 years of like when they open games up.
Yeah.
That's how they get hurt.
Yeah.
There have been moments over the last 3 years where they've scored. And so they've been the better team in open games. They've always given up chances in that spot. I think what Doyle said was really intelligent and smart. So I appreciate
brilliant.
What he said. But I would also add, and the other thing we talked about off camera was the hope was that Justin Glad was going to elevate over the course of his career to an elite.
And he's just a good defender.
Center back. He's good, but he's not elite. And that's one of his big struggles is decision-making and losing 50-50s in that moment, which could kill a transition moment. Walker Zimmerman at his best. Aaron Long is defender of the year. Yaimar at times. I guess Murillo and Segura at times over the last few years. Those players did that for teams that
love how
the
he
game
snuck
up. I'm always going to get
Segura. He just snuck it in there. They just kept rolling.
But Glad we thought as he bulked up, that was the big issue. It seems like along with that not happening, there's other, you know, reading the game stuff, which means RSL has to protect those players more.
He struggled. I mean, you saw him struggle as well in this matchup. And a couple of times, I believe it was the second goal for Houston, where he was just kind of out on an island a little bit and kind of, you know, he is struggling. You're seeing that. And I think that that's also an issue. But I think what you mentioned, you kind of hit on the head with Ruiz. I think that's been like the biggest difference with RSL. Yeah. We saw them. I mean, they were one of my most fun teams to watch, I think, right before Leagues Cup and even that first match in Leagues Cup where they dominate Seattle. Sorry, Anders. But then all of a sudden, it's kind of all changed since that Monterey game. That's when it really all began to change for them. And I think it's night and day, the team we were seeing before to now. It's a little sad because I was really enjoying watching them play that brand of soccer, and it's just not there anymore.
I wonder what element the rotation Pablo's done throughout the season plays here. When he was rotating and they were winning, it was a time of year where everybody was crushed. Like, every other team in the league was basically on fumes as far as, you know, physical, mental ability to stay engaged. Then they had a long break in Leagues Cup.
Yeah.
They rotated 8 players in this game, did Real Salt Lake, at home. I thought that was interesting.
Houston rotated too.
We got a first start for Kovacic.
Yeah.
So, and he played well, and Coco came off the bench and scored. There's just some flags here of like, is this, which was the real one? Which was the real team?
And it's, well, I mean, they're not like a team that, they're not going to give up 10 goals in their next 3 games. Well, I hope I'm not joking. Like, they're not going to give up. But Pablo Mascheroni does a great job of getting his team up for games in the dog days of summer, in the middle of that MLS schedule, where I think it's easy to come out flat. And they're, I mean, it's X-Dog, right? Like, we joked about it last year with RSL. And I think they're playing better soccer for the most part this year than they did last year. But they were able to get effort points that other teams were not able to get. Now is the time of year where there's urgency that's infecting almost everyone. I say almost because the Sounders still play without it. Sorry, Anders. There's a level of urgency that everybody's bringing to the table. So you're not going to get as many effort points. You have to outplay him. You have to be better about where you're using the ball if you're going to try to use the ball. You have to be more clinical on the break, and you have to be defensively more robust than RSL have been over the past 3 games.
RSL play Portland. They then host Colorado, and then they go to
Portland,
San Jose.
Right?
Yeah. If they give up 10 goals in the next 3 games to Colorado and San Jose, I will flip this table over. So, good luck. Test me, RSL.
Just checking to see how well this thing is anchored. I don't think particularly well. All right, Stefano, what do you got? What's your best thing?
So, naturally, since we are doing non-Messi, the best thing we saw, naturally, I'll go with the other Argentine number 10, Thiago Almada. But really just Atlanta overall.
Wait a minute. I'm derailing. Rank your Argentine number 10s in
this
MLS
league
right now.
I mean,
Messi's number one,
obviously.
Let's go top.
Well, Messi's actually only played 30 minutes in MLS in his career, so I don't know if you can put him in there.
And we're not saying best. We're saying favorite, most fun to watch. I'll say my number two is Bebelo Reynoso.
I was in between Thiago and I guess I'll give the edge just to Thiago just a little bit, just because he's, I guess, was here the whole season, number one, has been doing it since the beginning, and we saw him last year as well. But Reynoso and Thiago are right there. Lucho is another one. I mean, he's just been so good. But it's nice. It's nice to have this many good Argentine number 10s. I'm not
Lucho
biased
get
at all.
Mentioned?
Yeah, I just mentioned Lucho.
And Lucho got mentioned legitimately? Because Lucho's fun this year.
He's been great.
Yeah. But he like does things you don't expect.
I think he's actually less fun this year than he is effective. I think he would freelance a little bit more, and he would take risks that were kind of insane. And like this year, he's so locked in. It's all about.
But like the floated balls to the far post from midfield that like come out of nowhere when it comes.
How about when he spread the field on the first Cincy goal? I'm sorry.
You're right. No, but it's true. I mean, it's a good conversation to have. It's just because it's been fun to watch. I just wanted to kind of mention Atlanta overall, right? We know the struggles they had earlier in the season. I don't think that there's a team that had a more impactful, besides Miami, a more impactful transfer window as far as Atlanta's had. Obviously, we know that Thiago's going to do what he does. But Silva was incredible this past weekend. And I think the biggest signing that I thought was fantastic was Muyumba. I think he gives them so much balance in that midfield and is able to allow Thiago to get forward and to do his thing and not have to worry as much about tracking back. I thought, you know, going into this game against Nashville, I thought, oh, this is a great matchup that we're about to watch. Nashville coming off the League's Cup final, even though they had struggled in the league, motivation, you know, they're going to go for it. And they were just run off the field by this Atlanta squad. And it was awesome to watch Thiago being free. You know, the passes that he was hitting, the balls he was hitting Silva with, and he gets one back and was able to score. I think that this Atlanta team, we're seeing kind of a total reincarnation compared to what we saw earlier in the season. And I wouldn't be surprised if they kind of make a push here and are able to really impress and get a lot of results moving forward.
Consistency for them was a huge issue. Central midfield was, to get what your point on Muyumba.
Yeah. Just shape.
Yeah, just solidifying, right. Like, we know what to expect up and down the field from each other gives Almada the platform off which to be special. He's now up to, I think, 9 goals, 13 assists. He leads the lead in assists. Combined goals and assists, he's tied with Lucho, 12 and 10. And then I think Hani's one back of those guys. But that's kind of like the MVP conversation in a lot of ways. If Atlanta go on a run in the Eastern Conference as well as the West, outside of maybe the top team, is basically open, it's there. The question is, will he be there? Ajax, right, reportedly in, so for they 15 sold, million euros.
They sold Kudus for 44 million, I think it was.
It was over 40. Yeah.
Dollars or pounds?
Dollars.
Dollars.
Okay, just checking.
It might have been euros, and I don't know what the conversion is right now.
How much would it take?
In this economy?
Yeah. How much would it take for Atlanta to even consider it?
Should they probably take a number like that.
No. I think they would do it for
20.
20. I was going to say 25.
No way they're going to do it for 20.
Not for 20, I agree.
They bought him for 17.
Yeah.
So they're going to make. They're just going to flip him for the same in the middle of the season?
25 plus add-ons, because Ajax then sells him for 50.
That's the benefit of Ajax. And for the player, you're thinking Champions League as well as that big
flip
to the biggest possible club.
It has sounded like the assumption was that they wanted to break a record, which that wouldn't, right? Correct. And that
the
they
record is still Almiron, which is 29.
It felt like the concept was double it.
Yeah.
Which is make something around 34 or 35. And that would break Almiron. That would double what you put in. Now, I think it's fair if you have the foresight to be like, okay, if we're not going to get that number, what's the selling team that we can sell to make off the second one? And Ajax would be on the top of that list.
Right. Ajax or Benfica would be like the two ideal landing spots.
But it feels like a weird time to do that.
It is. It is. But if the number, like, congratulations on saying the biggest number. Like, that's, you know, that's exactly how it goes in this sport. And
normally when you sell late, it's because you need the money.
Normally, it's because someone says the biggest number.
Yeah, but that Ajax doesn't seem like a team capable of. But that's Chelsea, right? That's a team that spends
billions,
stupid money in stupid ways.
Yeah,
Ajax is not one of those teams. So it feels weird to think that Atlanta.
I mean, they make $100 million every window. They'll spend 40 of it.
Okay,
is this? I'm listening to you guys thinking out loud right now. Is this sort of a place where MLS is going to have problems in the future as you recruit more Thiago Almadas, or hope to recruit players of that caliber with this sort of interest, where your windows don't line up in a way that your financial interests and the players' interests would line up with your competitive ones? Because it doesn't make sense if you're Ajax or another big club to come in and break the transfer record for this player and be like, Atlanta be like, yeah, but we want to keep him until the winter.
Yeah.
Or you're like,
but this, I think also, so yes, but I think part of the reason you could say no is part of the issue here is Atlanta's incompetency over the last few years, where they are not in a place to have built a team. Let's talk about Columbus. Even as short as Wilfred Nance has been there, Columbus has a team that's already built where they could sell Zelarayán and be ready and bring the next guy in, but the next guy's not the issue. The point is, it's all already built where they would continue to be competitive.
Where they had Cucho, who's been there for a year. He's integrated.
So now, I don't know if Atlanta just signed a DP to play with Almada for the rest of this year, or if that was succession planning, but everything has come together right now for Atlanta, and it's not built the way you'd like it to. Now you could bring up the Revs and Petrovic. I think that is just one of those situations where sometimes you're going to be the team that falls in the crosshairs of another team pricing themselves into a bad situation, and you just have to sell. And that's just the reality of every team around the world, which is like, if you're going to give me if I'm going to make 17 times what I purchased this player for, I have to sell.
I feel like when they gave Thiago that number 10 shirt to finish the season, that's what I envisioned them saying, okay, you're getting this, you're going to finish the season, because they're not expecting to get that 30 million or whatever their number is to kind of decide to sell Tiago. That's kind of what I got. Now, of course, can some team come in and just completely overpay? Yeah, of course. You can't really blame Atlanta for doing that. But I got the impression that, okay, they're gonna keep this guy here, gave him the 10 shirt, make a push, and then kind of reevaluate what the offers are in January. That's kind of
And if I'm Ajax, I'm seeing all that go down and being like, I'm going to start negotiations through intermediaries and say to the player, what, you don't want to come to Ajax?
Right.
This is your chance to come to Ajax.
Play Champions League.
Go to Real Madrid. Go to whatever. Fill in the blank. Biggest club in the world. We can get you there.
Yeah.
It's hard to say no to those things when you're in the position of the player. And, oh, by the way, Thiago Amada is also looking around being like, yeah, this wasn't exactly built for me to thrive. Like, there had to be surgery done.
It is now.
It is now, but, like, those opportunities are finite and the windows can close.
I agree. It's a tough one. And like, this is all predicated on the idea that Ajax are going to step in and make the type
they
of offer.
They would have to.
Yeah.
So Steven Bergwijn's their all-time record high at $31.25 million.
To Spurs.
Pick currency. No. Acquisition.
Oh, acquisition.
Okay. Yeah. They then sell for a lot of money, too.
Yeah. What's their highest outgoing?
It's got to be a lot.
Yeah. It's going to be a lot higher than what they...
Didn't
Frankie
Barcelona
and
pay like...
DeLitt.
For...
Right?
I'm blanking on the name right now. Barcelona midfielder. Oh my gosh.
It is Man U's Antony at 95 million, whatever's. And then it's Frankie De Jong, and then it's Matias De Ligt.
No.
Lisandro Martinez.
Oh my gosh. He's literally, it's really pissing me off right now.
What nationality are we talking about?
Dutch. De Jong. Frankie De Jong.
That's what we just said.
We did say that.
You said his name four times.
He is Doyle's least favorite player on the planet.
It's been a long weekend, guys.
Yeah. It's okay, though. In the end, Atlanta did go out and get a DP, another main character, in Saba Lobodjanidze.
There it is.
DP forward from Georgia, had the nice little backheel goal, of course, provided by Thiago Almada.
Edson Alvarez, by the way, $38 million, too. Sorry.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, we're going through.
I'm doing this,
yeah.
Sorry, let's talk about my guy.
No, this was a shocking loss in a lot of ways from Nashville. Now, in other ways, not, because Walker Zimmerman's not in the 18 with an injury.
And
which
Dax
is,
was out.
And Dax was out.
I think those are two spine players where you could say, if either was out, okay, fine. They can manage it. Like, I think they have depth in both those positions. I think what they both mean to the team's structure, it's tough to get through a game with both out. And credit to Silva, by the way. Like, as good as Thiago Almada is, that's all Silva on that first goal. That ball's looping away from goal. He resets his feet. He's going back away from goal, and he slides it in. And then I think you looked at a team for Atlanta that was ready to take advantage of the way the game opened up, because Nashville had to chase and go after it. And those are two huge losses. I would assume most of the time they could manage, if Walker's healthy, that it's only one of them in and out of the team. Like, if you bring Sean Davison, but you start Walker Zimmerman, I think you feel pretty good. Same with Jack Mayer, as well as keeping Daxon.
Worst loss in Nashville history.
Only their second ever loss by more than two goals.
That's crazy.
Insane.
Yeah.
Crazy. All right.
I don't read a lot into it. Do you guys?
No.
No. They just lost a title at home last week. It's natural to have a little bit of a hangover, I think. And as you said, squad rotation.
But I do for Atlanta.
I actually agree.
Well,
especially this is back-to-back wins to come out of the League's Cup. And they looked helpless in that elimination against Miami in the League's Cup. So to come out and look not just dynamic going forward, but much more solid defensively. Moyamba, as you know, to your point.
But like, Silva tracks.
Yeah.
And works, which like hasn't been the case for a lot of their attacking players.
Weird that a Garth Lagerwey-led team is making good signings. Very strange.
Interesting.
Where's Kellen Rowe, though? How do we know if the team's good if Kellen Rowe's not something good?
Crack a bottle of wine, baby. Two wins in a row. Nashville in seventh right now. Four straight losses in the league. Of course, the league's got final run sandwiched in between all that. This is not groundbreaking analysis of any kind, but it is very important to get home field advantage.
Wow. So, Nashville.
Wow.
And right now in seventh, they're not going to be in that position. Now, it is very packed up, but they're 3-7-3 away. There's really only one good away team, maybe two in the Eastern Conference. Maybe you say Philly and Orlando, and since he would have an argument, but everybody else is like, ugh.
So Nashville in seventh on 38 points. They would be third in the Western Conference.
Yeah, the West is boo-boo.
The East is so good.
So, like, would Nashville make MLS Cup and host?
It's the wrong year to get pushed back into the East. We're a Western,
for sure.
We're a Western Conference team at heart. I was trying to tell you guys, like,
Walker's like, I'm losing flight status because I'm losing miles. Exactly, yeah. And now we have to be
no gold medallion, no two home games in the first round.
Yeah,
it's getting a little tight there.
Maybe are you diamond medallion with all the vacations you're taking this year?
Definitely.
I fly
up
for
there.
Free, baby. Companion pass. I don't know, whatever the perks are. I'm not very good at the credit card game. I'll have to up my game. No, that's not true. I'm going to Lisbon on credit card points later this year.
Woo! This guy.
Can we keep like a tab another of all vacation, the vacation and all the vacation days?
You get like a paper right calendar
there.
In the corner.
I don't mind the vacations. I just like to take it out when he's like, oh, having kids is so difficult. Life is so tough.
I'm leaving the kids at home for that one. It's going to be
life is
even
so
better.
Wonderful. All right, let's talk Messi. He's on the bench in Harrison at Red Bull Arena, Pac Stadium, of course. Hell, Pac Times Square. I had the big screen going with Messi in the game, and
not
people
a lot
were
of Red Bull.
Yeah, it was pretty pink in there, huh?
Crowd.
A lot of phones out. Yeah,
not a lot of Red Bull's kids at Red Bull Arena.
Yeah. Inter Miami started the night last in all of Major League Soccer. Not just the East, all of MLS on 18 points. They end the night with 21.
In David Goss's power rankings.
That's what happens when you're in last place.
Messi and Busquets on the bench. Tata goes a 5-2-3. All three U22 signings from the summer started. Diego Gomez, who I have not been impressed with, got his first goal.
I'm going to interrupt you because we have to get to this later on in the show. Josh Cloak of the Athletic reports that John Herdman has officially been hired as Toronto FC's next head coach and will leave the Canadian men's national team immediately.
Well, you don't have to worry about Patrick Schulte because Borjan is starting the next 5 years in goal for Toronto. Bring the sweatpants. Get the sweatpants deal locked up.
I'm on board with that. If he gets into the league, I'm Borjan for Halloween on Extra Time. I'll tell you that right
should
now.
Should we do the Messi segment first and then we'll go back to Toronto?
I'm sorry to John Herdman in Toronto. You do not get to trump Messi. You're at the bottom of everything. So you're at the bottom of this rundown as well. Diego Gomez, first goal. As I said, I haven't really thought he played particularly well, but this has been his best game yet. And then Messi and Busquets, two great applause. And many a cell phone hoisted in the air. Enter in the 60th minute. And Messi, of course, gets his goal, his 11th in 9 games, puts the entire Red Bulls back line and / midfield on skates a little bit, and then they all watch as he walks toward goal and taps the ball in from Benjamin Kromoski, and Inter Miami get their first win to narrow the playoff gap to 11 points with 11 games remaining. They have at least 2 games in hand on every team above the line and every team below but Charlotte, who they play twice the rest of the way.
The Ashley Westwood versus Messi rivalry. We've all been talking about coming into this.
Scott Arfield, you mean? Let's keep it in Canada.
Right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Arfield's not a starter, but neither is Messi.
But
so
he is a goal scorer. He beat LAFC.
True.
What did we make of this match, Stefano?
What I was impressed with was the first 60 minutes without Messi and Busquets. I thought Miami was a lot better than the Miami we've seen without Messi and Busquets prior to this. Obviously, now that you know you have Diego Gomez, you have all the U22 signings that played that obviously play a part. But I was impressed just of how they were able to, and granted, they're playing the Red Bulls, you know, the kind of soccer that they play, but they were in controlling and possession, were able to look pretty balanced front to back. And I was really impressed just with how they're performing without these guys on the pitch. I think that you just see the confidence kind of oozing out of these guys where, you know, 2 months ago, it was basically the same team minus the U22 signings, and it was not good, not balanced.
Straight L's.
Straight L's all across the board. So that's what impressed me the most. Diego Gomez hadn't really impressed, just like as you said, hadn't really impressed me too much in his few appearances. He was a lot better. He gets his goal. I just think what the biggest – I think you can't really – speak of just how big the impact of Messi and Busquets is, not just when they're on the pitch, but just the impact they've had on the club as a whole and on these players that, you know, like we said, Robert Taylor was looking like Angel Di Maria in the League's Cup, that type of thing. I think it's really pretty cool to see that just not only on the pitch, but off the pitch as well.
Yeah, I agree with you. And what I would add in that presence of what Messi brings, I think, is they started this game in a 4-5-1. They packed the middle. They weren't going to give up goals. All of the things Miami has struggled with, some of what we talked about with RSL, transition moments, being way too vulnerable down the middle. They set up to avoid those because they knew when Messi came on the field, they could score.
Right.
That's a card very few managers can play. And I think very few teams can go out. Like if you set a team up that way, you go into game and mentally it's like, oh, we got to grind for 90 minutes to just get a tie. Where I think this game was, well, we know our job. This is our job because when Messi comes in, then we'll score and then we'll win. And it was about keeping them off the board. Now, they got the go-ahead goal, a set-piece moment, right? Second retaken play. I thought well done by Taylor and Gomez, but they weren't really open trying to create chances. If that had been Miami 3 months ago, they would have tied 0-0.
Right.
And so that's sort of the difference of what Messi allows you to do on top of Aviles and Gomez right. and new talent that has come into the team besides Messi.
Aviles, I think, is, I mean, it's a very short sample size, but I watched him a little bit in Argentina when he played with Racing. I think he's really, really good. And I think it's, we saw some of what their issues were, even with Messi, you know, defensively. They do have some holes. They do give up some opportunities. Drake Callender, again, was awesome, absolutely yep. awesome in this game again.
And the Red Bulls did their job.
And the Red Bulls
missing chances,
of course. Yeah, but
Omar Fernandez.
But that's what they do. I mean, but that's what they, I'm sorry. Sure. I mean, I love my Red Bulls guys. Worked for them for a couple of years. Love them, but that's what they do. They don't score goals, and they haven't gotten goals from their striker position in like probably 4 or 5 years now. Where you know consistent goals from that position. So yeah, look, I think defensively, Inter Miami's been kind of leaky even with Messi. But you're starting to see now with some of the new signings playing together a little bit, even defensively, they look better. They look better against the Red Bulls.
Miami unbeaten in 9 games with Messi. Of course, not all wins in the traditional sense. Some are wins via PK and Leagues Cup. But 1-for-1 in MLS, that's what they need every time out. 3 points. Zoe, are they the best team in MLS right now? We had a rip-roaring argument about our power rankings votes. Dave put them, what,
17th? You can't go from last to first playing one game in MLS.
In the power rankings, you certainly could.
No, you can't.
MLS yes, you can. Teams.
They have played one MLS David game since they were last.
So much about the power
and
rankings.
Now they're first.
You're yeah. basically a St. Louis fan. You're so upset about the power rankings.
Go Ozzie Newsome. Who was the shortstop?
Ozzie Smith.
Ozzie Smith.
Ozzie Newsome.
Yeah, he was
good
amazing.
Try.
I hate
wow.
him. But he was like
I popped Doyle on that one. I didn't realize I'd get you.
Yeah, best power rankings fan in soccer. That's excuse me. That's Gus.
They're certainly in the discussion for the best team. You go to Philadelphia and you absolutely murk the Union. You go to Nashville and yeah, you're kind of hanging on for dear life at the end there, but you get the draw and then you beat Nashville for a trophy. You go to Cincinnati where Cincy don't lose anymore and you get the draw and you advance to the final. Like those are 3 of the 5 or 6 best teams
yes or
in
no.
the league.
Yes or no. Best team in MLS. And if not Miami, who?
I still think it's Cincy. But Miami's in that discussion. And there's not a lot of, I don't think there's a lot of wiggle room between probably the top 4 or 5 teams in MLS right now. And Miami's there. And, you know, over the course of the next month and a half, they're still going to have ups and downs. But I think what they showed in this game is that they have the depth to grind out some results that they're going to need to do. You know, I think they play Sporting Kansas City in 2 weeks, and that'll be at home. They won't have Messi for that one. He'll be, you know, with Argentina.
Or Robert Taylor or Christoph, probably. Yeah.
So that one's going to be tough. Yeah. They're going to need someone to, you know, to not just grind out a result, but to actually be creative, to actually get on the ball. And that's still kind of an open question. They're going to win 2 trophies in the course of 6 weeks. Like,
wow.
Sorry,
wow.
Houston, but like, they're going to win 2 trophies.
Don't do my Houston Dynamo like that.
In the course of 6 weeks. Of course they're one of the best teams in MLS.
Who's the best penalty kick taker in MLS, Bossy or Messi?
I got to tell you, like, Messi since the World Cup final, Messi has looked like a new level of just at ease taking kicks from the mark.
I would say even the beginning of the World Cup, because as someone who watches all those games, that's the other narrative. But I feel like for years prior to this year, probably the only time I was ever nervous watching Messi was him taking a PK, yep. where it's like, yeah, he's good, but also he's missed quite a few of these ever since the World Cup. And now I'm probably jinxing it. He missed one at the World Cup against Poland, right. And that was it. and he hasn't missed one since. Anywhere.
I was so nervous when he stepped up, because I was rooting for Argentina. I wanted to see Messi win the World Cup because I wanted the discussion over, right? So I was so nervous for him during the shootout against France in the end, because like if he had missed that, that would be all anyone ever talked about for the rest of his life and our lives and all that. So, but yeah, like there has not been any of those nerves from him. He's looked, I think, more confident even stepping up to the spot in League's Cup and then Open Cup semifinals as well.
Gave a stare down to Cincy, to Cincy's crowd in the Open Cup after he makes his.
Hey, one past Alec Khan. You know, you get come on.
That was pretty funny to see that.
All right, let's just plot it out the rest of the way for Inter Miami, because it is a Herculean task in front of them, but they have the sports equivalent of.
Are
Hercules.
We doing this now? Or are we going to do this every show for the rest of the?
Well,
season?
let's
keep it tight. Let's keep
no comment. No yeah. comment on that. You like schedules, though, Dave.
I do like this. I'm not going to lie. Yeah, I'm having fun.
So right. Tata says that Messi will play against Nashville and then at LAFC, and then it's the international break and he will go play with Argentina. So he'll miss the home game against Sporting Kansas City. Then Tata also had a quote after last night that Messi would miss at least 3 games this year. And then obviously next year will be the same because he'll be with Argentina then as well. The other international break, currently no games scheduled for Inter Miami, but they have to make up somewhere. The home date against Charlotte that got pushed because they got to the League's Cup final, and that is given their schedule, which is essentially midweek weekend over and over and over and over, but the US Open Cup as well. That seems like that's probably the only place you could put that game. So there's 2 games he could miss. One for sure, Sporting Kansas City. One maybe the Charlotte home game. It lines up well that they're home games for Miami, I think. Where would the other one be? Or is Tata just talking? Like, there's Nashville on Wednesday. That's a home game. Then at LAFC, then Sporting Kansas City at home, we discussed. Then it's at Atlanta, home against Toronto, at Orlando, between Orlando and New York City, which is the next match. It's the U.S. Open Cup final at home against Houston. So they have New York, then you're at Chicago, Cincinnati at home. That's a good break for them. At Charlotte, then TBD on that home Charlotte game. Like, where's that third game that he is going to miss?
My assumption is that as a organization, they've ran some numbers of like, this is how many minutes we think he has in him. This is what each player, but whatever they did their physical testing with him, needs if we fly, when we have
load
games.
Management.
No, it's just that's what sports science is. So my assumption is they're having a conversation where it felt fairly casual from Tata of like he just said it and it's obvious to him. So whether that's something that's predetermined, whether he misspoke slightly, which would be fine.
Or they're saying it'll just come. Like, yeah, we'll figure out the right time for it. But
or he meant multiple international windows, because there is one in November, right, which would be in the playoffs, which is past what we are talking about. But they may have already talked about that internally. Whatever it is, they're playing twice a week for like the next 2 months. He's going to miss games. It feels unlikely that he's going to play on the weekend and on Wednesday every single week for the rest of the season.
Feels like away games, they might just roll with this formula of him coming off the bench. But like, why not?
Maria's about to come through that door.
Yeah, she's going to be at Chicago. Yeah. Anybody who bought those tickets might come through
that door. Chicago one is likely to be massive. If you look at the standings, it's October 4th. October 4th.
Charlotte's huge. Atlanta's huge. Yeah. I mean, they obviously can't afford to take games off.
Yeah.
A lot of the matchups are six-pointy things, except for the ones against the Western Conference. I mean, Willie Agata is going to be the best player in the stadium now because
you get
it. He's going to be God.
Come on. Since they play Cincinnati, so it's the Chicago game on the 4th, and then Cincinnati at home on the 7th, and then theoretically he would fly to Argentina to go for World Cup qualifying, where that first game is on the 12th.
Right. And then at Charlotte is the 21st decision day.
Right.
Do you want to do Mike and the Mad Dog and just go win?
Yeah,
loss,
yeah. No, 100%.
Win,
let's do it. They need that. So if they need 2 points per game to get to 43 points, which is the average for the last 3 years of ninth place, and that would sneak them in. Ultimately, you do need more points than that to guarantee it. So let's just say it's 7 wins and a draw. So let's try to get 7 wins out of this. Toronto at home, check mark, win. I mean, I'm just
I'll say NYCFC where are we starting from? At home too. He just went in the middle. He basically
I'm just trying to
guarantee.
Find wins. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Got it. Sounds good.
I'll say NYCFC at home as well. Those are 2 wins.
Yeah. I'll say they're gonna win. I think they win against Nashville. Also, again, the way that Nashville's playing.
We've given them 3 home wins, and now you're running out of home games. at Chicago, win at Orlando. not as sure, but Orlando at home is not exactly a juggernaut.
I'm not going to lie. I have no idea what we're doing right now. Yeah, they could win all these games. Yeah, look, they probably won't. I don't know. Yeah,
what do you put the odds at to get into the playoffs?
10%.
Mm.
Ooh.
I had 25% the other day.
Yeah. Okay. It feels, I think, closer to that number than 10%.
And even to be at 25, that is like miracle work.
Yeah.
I don't know. Let's talk Nashville. How do they get the win, Doyle? And how much will the League's Cup final play into what we see?
I mean, it better play into it if you're Nashville, especially coming off the 4-0, right? Because you get a chance to get a little bit of revenge. I mean, this would knock Miami back if Miami lose this game. I expect them to look, Nashville that is, to look more like the team from the League's Cup final than they did this past weekend. I think that's part of the reason why there was some rotation. And I expect the game to play out similarly, not necessarily in terms of the scoreline, because like the last thing you want to do is go down against Inter Miami. But in terms of kind of that flat 4-4-1-1 that I think is Gary Smith is on the record as saying, like, that's my favorite formation. And it puts Hani Mukhtar in sort of a free role, right? And he could find the game as a goal scorer or find the ball and be an orchestrator or, you know, just sort of be in the box combining with Sam Sturridge, and I also expect them to do what they did in the League's Cup final, which is vary their line of confrontation. If you look back at that game, they start deep, but then they actually push their line of confrontation up in like 15-minute blocks throughout the game, and it was really effective. It kind of prevented Miami from getting into a rhythm. And of course, the other thing that Nashville did like shockingly well in that game, anytime Miami pressed, and Tata Martino's, so you know they're going to come press from time to time. Anytime Miami pressed, Nashville played out of it. Like, they did not just settle for knocking it long. They actually played out of it, and they were really effective doing that. Got into open space a number of times. They weren't as effective in their off-ball movement in those moments. I thought they could have been more aggressive and been actually gone a little bit more vertical once they got near the midfield stripe. So I would expect them to try to be a little bit more opportunistic and ruthless in those transition moments.
Two things that stood out to me this weekend along this, by the way. One was Nashville was down 3-0, and they made four changes, and Hani wasn't one of them. And Hani came out in the 89th minute. So that was very bizarre. They took Surge off in place of Teal Bunbury. And in watching the game, Teal runs on, starts giving directions. I just assumed it was for Hani. And then Hani's still on the field. I thought that was an odd way to push him in a game where, I don't know, it felt like it was over. The other thing was Messi came on as the center forward in a game they were up 1-0. I think that also gives you a little bit of like how much cover Tata needs to build in for Messi and choosing how to use him. And this one was, I don't want to take the defensive hit of having Messi be a second forward or midfielder, but I know I can play through his feet and we can hold it up as much as we want whenever we need to, and he went and scored. So I thought those were two interesting wrinkles over the course of the weekend of like, I don't know, does Hani go 90 in Atlanta and then come down and go 90 in Miami? That seems like a tough back-to-back for a player, even if you're coming off League's Cup, having a week off and sort of rested a little. But as Doyle said, Nashville has the playbook of what worked for them against Inter Miami. You think they do similar things. Schaffelberg was healthy and played the full game. When you talk about the verticality off the ball and the movement, that's what he's been good at for them. He was not as fully available.
To see Hani get a little bit more vertical. And I think that is one of the changes. If we could see more of Randall Leal, right, coming in off one of those wings, if it's going to be a flat 4-4-2, put Hani, like, have his starting position be a little bit higher, because that, like, puts the fear of God into any defender out there. And Miami's defenders have been very good, but they're not having to, in their worst moments in the League's Cup, they had to run guys down in the open field and they couldn't. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen much of that the past couple of games from them. I think Nashville have the personnel, if Leal is available, and it's always a question mark with him, but they have the personnel to put Miami into that very bad situation. And oh, by the way, it's Hani Mukhtar that you're trying to run down in the open field.
Any thoughts?
I was really shocked by this game with Nashville, just because I really was kind of like, you know, was hoping that they were going to get that that motivation coming off the League's Cup final, how well that they played.
It was just so out of character.
It was just so out of character. It's not what I expected. I was literally hyping that game up as one of the best of the weekend. I think all of us kind of thought that, yeah, this would be a pretty good matchup. It is kind of weird, like you mentioned, that Hani plays, you know, plays 89 minutes or whatever it was when that game's 3-0, when they still have to worry about this game. And look, and like you said, these games are important for them too. Nashville's got to continue to win. They got to continue to move, try to move up that table to get that home game. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to expect from Nashville. I thought I did. I don't know what to expect of them in this game against Miami, just because we saw the blueprint, but then we saw that, you know, them lay an egg against Atlanta. So I really don't know what Nashville we're going to be getting in this matchup.
Nashville with 9 losses on the season, only Montreal and Chicago are worse than that. I mean, that's sort of obvious given the standings, but a little surprising to me that the spread's not better for them in win losses this year. Trying to find that level they had in League's Cup. We'll see if they can do it against Miami. Big match going down this Wednesday night, a packed slate. We'll get to more games there as well. Cincinnati had a tough stretch there into League's Cup, then hell is real. Come back and smack NYCFC at home. It's been 45, 50 minutes of the show before we really dug into this matchup. 10-point gap at the top, Dave. It's their shield, yeah? Like, how do you handle the rest of the season if you're Pat Noonan?
I think you're just, with losing Open Cup, you're trying to treat games like playoff games to get ready for the postseason. And that's been one of the issues we've seen. And it's a new playoff format, so we don't know, again, what it'll look like, what it'll feel like. We've had times where teams have had long layoffs, and we had, of course, international breaks in the past. Then we've not had them where actually you want to rest guys to, like, be fit. We don't have an exact formula yet, but I think for Cincinnati, it's like trying to be sharp, trying to treat big games the rest of the regular season like big games, to train yourself to get over a little bit of a hump now, which is you lost a League's Cup knockout game that you think you should have won to continue more in that tournament, and you lost the semifinal at home, which was a big opportunity in your club's history, and one in which you led. And it felt like, we haven't talked about the Open Cup semifinal.
No, we haven't. You can do that right now if you'd like.
It felt like they went into protection mode too deep for them to see the game out, and they allowed Miami opportunities. They didn't give them a chance, and they didn't lay down, but it felt too safe in bringing Ray Gattis and over, was it Alvis Powell? They made two defensive subs at the same time, like the 75th, and they just completely dropped their line. And Miami was always going to have the ball. They were always going to push, but they didn't give themselves an outlet. And these are the learning things. I mean, we were talking about this with Philly still, of like how to get over the hump in the biggest must-win games. And I think that's going to be a learning experience for Cincinnati. And so you're going to try and test this as much as you can now over the rest of the season. And then the last part is getting Bupenza comfortable and a part of it. He got a goal. It wasn't pretty for him, but it doesn't matter. Yeah, but he's a goal scorer, and he needs to score goals. And that was a good early start for them coming back into the league, focusing on it.
That goal for him is actually better than seeing him like get one of those balls.
Oh, like that's the type of goals you want to see him.
Yeah, yeah, in part because he's still staying engaged in the play, even when he's not part of the play. And that was a struggle for him the first like 3 or 4 times we saw him. Like, he was sulking off the ball if everything wasn't running through him, and we didn't see that from him in this game. And maybe it's because he scored an early goal, but like, he was engaged, he was involved even when he wasn't getting much of the ball at all. And like, that boded as well for Cincy during the stretch run as the scoreline did. I thought
fifth of 16 wins by more than one goal. So I think if you have two things you're working on, it's one, getting multi-goal leads that we saw against Miami as well. And then how do you choke the life out of other teams once you get it there? Because come the playoffs, they have the talent on both sides of the ball to get out to an insurmountable lead and just put games to bed.
Yeah.
And given they're going to be playing almost all their games at home, if they advance, I mean, every game at home, given their shield status, like, that's what you should be figuring out. How do you get going from an attacking perspective without losing your balance, and then what do the last 25 minutes of games look like when you lead?
And in the end of that game, not having Mascara was big, because he's a guy who battles with Campagna, who's you know, being connected. But not every team's going to be fully healthy for every big game. So you have to be able to get over the line without your 100% starting lineup.
I think that they could take it. They could take that game in the final, the way it all went down, and kind of learn from that when they do get to the playoffs, because like you said, once they did make it to extra time, the team they had out on the field was a completely defensive team. Like, they had nothing to go forward in that game, and they could find themselves in that very same situation if they get, once they get, you know, once they get past that, you know, that first part of the playoffs. I think that that's a good opportunity for them to see, hey, you know, we can't really do that. You learn from that and move forward. You know, I still think that this Cincy team is the top team in the league. I think I still argue that Inter Miami is probably is definitely the more just a more talented team. Obviously, with Messi, has so much to do with that. But I do think that Cincinnati, they kind of have everything set up to make that run and to go, you know, to go far and in this playoffs. It'll just be interesting how they handle those situations, the pressure situations, how they handle the rest of the regular season.
Right now, best team in the league at home, 12-0-1 at home.
Three of the next four away. I think it's actually four of the next five, but it's they're actually jumping into a blender here. It's at Atlanta, home to Orlando, who's playing really well now, at Philadelphia, who we just talked about. They're playing very well. At Montreal, who just got a big win.
9-3-0 at home, Montreal. Very good there.
And then finally, a month from now, home against Charlotte, like, which looks like, you know, that looks like it should be 3 points, and then at Toronto. So the next four games, they'll face some teams that there's a high chance that they're going to see in the playoffs. So this is a chance for Cincy not only to clinch their first trophy as an MLS team, but to, as we've just talked about, sort of fine tune what they're doing and get into even better form heading into the postseason. And look, this is a team that I agree with you. I think Miami have the most talented roster in the league. I don't think it's far and away more talented than Cincinnati. The Cincinnati team has the type of roster that could do the Shield MLS Cup double.
Lucho is dumb. Like, he's the dribbles and the vision and the balance.
So nasty. Does he count as a, for our conversation earlier, does he count as an Argentine number 10 now because he's a U.S. citizen?
Oh, Argentinian American, even closer to your heart, my friend.
It's perfect.
It's between him and Ben Hahn. Great club right now.
I honestly could not wait to see Lucho playing for the national team.
Same.
If, like, get him on the roster for Copa America as a super sub.
I don't think he's going to be eligible yet. I don't know why, but someone said I don't know what the process point of the process he's in. Someone had said the first year he'll be eligible is 2026.
Damn.
So it would be that, like, sucks. Do they throw him in World Cup year?
Hey, Joe,
for it?
Yeah, right.
Get this thing done.
I was laughing with some friends saying, like, oh, so Lucho now is a U.S. citizen and Berhalter's the coach. So that means Gio Reyna's not going to be playing anymore because Lucho's taking that spot.
Just wait a while. Wait a while. Who knows, man?
Sorry, Gio.
I can't go back into the U.S.
Don't
national
check your Twitter mentions
course.
For a while.
I can't do it. I just can't. For Cincinnati, big win, NYCFC. Actually, putting a pin in NYCFC? Is it over?
No, I established, because I like a good schedule read, and Doyle really got me going with his. That was a beautiful schedule read, by the way. NYCFC has five games in a row at home right now. This was the last away game at the Sportage Shield leader. So I will bury them if we do not see the performances and the results in that run.
Okay.
But they probably need like 13 points from these five games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go Mets.
Meanwhile, for Cincinnati, good news at the top of the Western Conference for their Shield lead. Everybody dropped all 3 points. Orlando hosts St. Louis, 2-1 win. Really big referee decision at the end. Video review awarding a penalty via handball to Orlando, which Facundo Torres finishes. He also scored the earlier goal for Orlando. Now has 10 goals on the season. Charlotte hosted LAFC and won 2-1. The aging midfield duo of Ashley Westwood and Scott Arfield score. And Mario Gonzalez got his first goal for LAFC. And then, of course, we talked about it. RSL laid the big fat egg against Houston at home. Which of those losses, eliminate RSL, we already buried them, between St. Louis and Charlotte, or LAFC, which was a bigger road loss / bad performance?
It's tough to go on the road and win an MLS this time of year. I think we're all probably a little bit more surprised about LAFC losing at Charlotte because Orlando's playing really good ball. We saw it last week. Orlando went down 1-0, but then they just were surgical, taking the fire apart. And what we're seeing from this Orlando City side is a little more creativity in the final third, a little more chemistry, the ability to sort of link play. Once they unbalance an opposing defense and, like, they get you, And that was kind of missing earlier in the year. Earlier in the year, it was like
they let you back in.
Yeah,
yeah.
They let you get your shape. Like now it's like, oh, this guy stepped in. He missed. You know, he stepped a step and a half too late. Boom, we got you. And sometimes it's the fullbacks pushing up. Sometimes it's guys, you know, bursting out of central midfield. Most often these days, it's the wingers. Faku Torres was really, really good this past weekend. I think Angulo on the other side has been really good. And it's actually taken some of the pressure off of Ercan Kara and Duncan Maguire, who have gone a little bit dry in front of net over the past month. But Orlando's still scoring multiple goals every game anyway. So I don't have them up in that first tier with the very top of the East, but they're close. So St. Louis going down there, going down a goal, coming back and equalizing, and then only taking the loss by, you know, unfortunate deflection off a penalty or off a set piece that leads to a penalty kick. I mean, you can't fault St. Louis at all. LAFC is a little bit surprising. Yeah. LAFC is a little bit, especially because Charlotte didn't just sit back. Charlotte had 65% possession. And usually in those situations, LAFC is like, oh, okay. You're going to come off field with the ball?
Also, usually Charlotte's like, oh, okay, here you go.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Take the ball.
But you travel from LA to Charlotte. As you said, it's tough this time of year with everything.
Just ask Bruce Arena, you know, those Railhawks.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. That's a trip that's
historically difficult.
Sometimes you don't even take. I would say for St. Louis, one, Klaus back. So that was massive. Yep. And he was on the field for like 13 seconds, didn't get near the ball. They scored. Yeah. So the Klaus effect in full.
Do I get that in the golden boot? I don't even care about the golden boot. My 24 team is so stacked.
Oh my God.
Messi in a keeper league? You guys are done.
It doesn't matter. Every trophy matters. One of us wins this year, and then in 3 years,
somebody's so bad at the exercise that they're, you know, I guess.
Yeah, it's true.
Classic American sport.
Classic American sport.
Classic American sport.
I got the Canadian championship. I'm going to get the shield. Come on.
So on Charlotte's point, I was chatting with Doyle about this before, but they did some really interesting things to kill the problems they've had and the things that LAFC does really well of transitional moments. They basically pushed Privet into midfield in possession and then dropped their fullbacks down. And so
the John Stones role.
Yeah, pretty much the only moment.
The Penn State John Stones, huh?
The only moment Privet lost his mind. He tried to make a run into the box to get on the end of a cross, and LAFC scored four passes and 15 seconds later. Otherwise, LAFC didn't really have transition moments outside of one in the first half where someone missed a cross to Buonga that should have been a tap-in. So it was a positive night for Charlotte. I'm pretty sure Derek Jones, most underrated player in MLS, and he continues to get it done, boy.
Segura and Derek Jones filling up your bingo cards. Okay. Should we talk Toronto now, or should we? No, because they're not even in the playoffs.
Does Charlotte make the playoffs, David?
I got to do a schedule read then.
Look how excited you got.
Look how excited. I wasn't ready for that.
Charlotte are in 12th place. They are 3 points back of 9th place Chicago. They do have a game in hand. They're just 4-3-5 at home, 3-6-3 away. So five at home, five on the road.
And that also, we have the Miami game that has not been rescheduled in there.
Yeah, there are two games against Miami.
Yeah, they play Miami on Decision Day, which is delicious.
In Charlotte.
Yeah, I don't know.
Feels like that's going to be the race for 10th place.
It would set up like that, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Just ninth, just barely out of reach. I'm going to say no. Yeah.
So I guess you weren't here for this. Who do you have it? Miami, I assume, because they're the best team in the world.
I think 1-7 are safe. So right. Nashville up right. are making the playoffs.
So the question is Montreal down. I don't see Chicago, any life from
I would
DC.
Put Chicago down before I put Montreal down. I don't see it for DC. I don't see it for the Red Bulls. To me, it's New York City or it's Miami.
I'm not out on the Red Bulls yet. So I'll say that. But I think you're right in that assessment. Chicago's going to bounce back and win the next three.
Now, yeah, just because he said it, of course.
Yeah. MLS, baby.
Yeah, it's that time of year. Speaking of most impactful playoff result this weekend, let's start with Dallas-Austin. Dallas was below the line starting the match day. They are now above the line and above Austin, who were fortunate that Minnesota didn't get all 3 points. So Austin stays above the line on tiebreaker. This was Copa Tejas. Austin, with a win, would have won their second straight. Copa Tejas, and their second straight in Frisco. You remember they celebrated in the parking lot last year. It was pretty cool scenes. Didn't happen for them. Now they'll have to wait for the result on September 30th between Houston and Dallas to see if they hold on. If it's a draw, they will hold on to Copa Tejas. If either team wins, Dallas or Houston, that will be the team that wins
your
the
beloved
competition.
Houston Dynamo.
I know, and they haven't won one of these before, so this is a huge,
big moment.
Huge moment for them. I think they'll have the Open Cup 3 days before that final, and then have a chance to do the double in Copa Tejas. Just saying. This was not a vintage performance from us.
This was terrible.
Yeah.
This was really disappointing from Dallas. And
no Jesus. He was no Jesus ill, Ferreira. But in the stadium. He was Jesus feeling Jimenez, better, but not enough.
Yeah, not.
Areola's back?
Areola's back. The whole thing was ponderous. And this is the issue with the way Nico Estevez has his team play, right? Because he wants positional play.
And Lucci before that in Dallas.
He wants to have pitch control. And I completely understand that. And if you look at last year, right, defensively, they were so much better last year than they were the year before because of that positional play, because they never lost the ball in bad spots. They always had numbers back. I think they ended up being the second best team defensively in the Western Conference. And it was the right choice, but you sacrifice dynamism, and I think you sacrifice some creativity when you institute this type of approach. And I think we saw that in the League's Cup in the 4-4 against Inter Miami. That was the best Dallas have looked all year. Oh, yeah. And Dallas inverted the triangle. They played with a double pivot, right? It was Quinone and Legette played deep, and Velasco, another pseudo Argentinian number 10, because he was only a number 10 for that game. He's played as a number 8 otherwise over the last couple of months. And that gave him the freedom to go where he wanted to and get on the ball and get that team into transition. All of that was missing in this game. It was back to pitch control. And I think it just comes at the sacrifice of attacking dynamism.
With almost 30 minutes up a man, because Danny Pereira committed a crazy second yellow card.
Yeah, I think you need to see... For Dallas to get results and move forward, I think you need to see Velasco just be that guy. Whether they're playing him as a 10, whether they're playing him as an 8, he just needs to have more of an impact. I think he's way too talented and way too important to that team to not show out, not be kind of just a focal point in their attack.
Yeah, we're seeing the floor for them is like around the playoff line. Like, they're pretty consistent if you're just looking at the floor, but the ceiling's not crazy higher.
Which is unfortunate because they were third last year.
Yeah.
In the Western Conference, they won a playoff game. So that should have been the floor. And like the idea was, it's a lot of young players who are going to progress another year. And obviously Nico Estevez being there longer. They took a step back, I think, losing Matt Hedges. And that felt like a lot of the first half of the season was... To Doyle's point about pitch control of like they didn't trust the back line, I think, internally. And so they shifted even more their game model to protect themselves defensively. And we've seen it. Like, they've been one of the better defensive teams in the league, but they have not been able to unlock
26
things.
Goals, second worst in the Western Conference behind only or better than only Colorado.
Expected and, goals are no better.
And a potential
they're like
golden
fifth
boot.
Worst expected but, goals non-penalty.
Yeah, and like it's when you talk about some of these other teams, like, well, no one can finish. Jesus Ferrer can finish, and he has scored. So they have pieces. Paul Ariel has been out a large part of the season, but I think it's unfortunate. I think we all thought they were going to do something maybe via transfer to just bring some more energy. I don't know that Iramendi's that player, but the hope would be if you trust him more, you can go back to the single pivot, you can unlock maybe some of your central players to say you can go and attack and take more risks because we have cover. I don't think he's
that
guy.
I mean, think about when they were playing well in the League's Cup. It was they beat Necaxa, was it?
Yeah, but Necaxa got a red card in the 8th.
But like even before that, though, it was like Legette was releasing early from central midfield, getting into the box. I think he got a goal in that game. And like they were getting numbers into the box.
They were also direct quickly.
Yeah. And in this game, if you like, first of all, like, the Dallas players were mostly allergic to going into the box until the final 15 minutes. And it was never happening at pace. Is always just like really laborious just to get into the final third. That said, they got the late goal. They won. They jumped Austin in the standings. And
give Nicristi Tafari his flowers, man. That's his second goal in second half stoppage time this year. The other one got
in front of Matt Hedges.
San Jose. Yeah,
Hedges was a little defending on the play. Tafari has been good.
He's been very good.
And there's a reason that they said we're comfortable letting Hedges go, or we don't want to pay and give the guaranteed years that Toronto was offering, because they had confidence that Tafari could be the guy, and they obviously have spent a decent amount on Martinez. I think they were right about a lot of that long term, and it's cool for Tafari to have his moment so then people can come interview him to talk to him and not about Hesse. Yeah.
They care about me now. Sporting Kansas City 3, San Jose 0. No surprise San Jose went on the road and then can't follow that up with the second one. I mean, they've only done it twice this year. They've been tough away. Sporting Kansas City needed this one at Children's Mercy Park. It was good to see the guys around Alan Pulido play at sort of the level that we know they can, and Pulido just seems like that guy, like a force multiplier in those positions. So you got goals from Shallowey and Russell and Tommy. And
that goal by Russell. Yeah, the nutmeg so in the good. Box. That was awesome.
Tommy, so the good. Beautiful strike from Tommy too, as well.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, Sporting Kansas City in 11th. They are 3 points out of the playoffs. The Western Conference is straight up nutty.
Yeah.
Like from, I'm going to extend it all the way to number 3, Seattle, 37 points, down to Kansas City in 11th. That's an 8-point gap.
Wow.
8 points. And a lot of discrepancies as far as game played. So that could all get tighter even over the course of the next few weeks as those get made up. How about the Galaxy working over the Fire? Without Diego Fagundes, which maybe, Dave, you can tell us the story of why Diego tried but couldn't to play on this match day. Yeah.
And without Gaston Jimenez.
Yeah, Gaston Jimenez did play, then he tried not to play. And
got second yellow in the 29th minute.
For a two-footed jumping stomp on Douglas Costa's foot that easily could have been a red card.
And then they scored off of that. I think Costa has 7 assists and a goal in his last 9 games in all competitions.
And he was working hard defensively.
He's got that
contract year drive right now. I don't think we're going to see Douglas Costa back in LA next season.
Yoshida made a debut, so did Cerrillo. Fagundes tried to. Apparently there was a snafu with his number and registration and some other things. So he attempted to come on. He wasn't allowed. He went back to the locker room. They repressed a new jersey for him with a new number. It was Chicharito's number.
He ran up
number.
Into the concourse, bought a Chicharito jersey, tried to play in that. That's great. Turns out you're not allowed to.
Boy. So, yeah, anything else from the weekend, or can we jump into Herdman in Toronto?
Do it.
All right. Well, John Herdman's the new head coach of of Toronto. What do we think about that? I mean, he had to escape. This is sad to say, and it's sad for everyone involved with the Canadian national team, certainly on the men's side, even more so, I would argue, on the women's side. Just an absolute train wreck of an organization. It seemed like he had to get out, wanted to get out.
But how bad... it tells you how bad that position was and that national team is right now, that federation, that he chose to go to Toronto when they're where they are right now. And I get it. I thought, you know, we might see Herdman take this job, but I figured it'll be next season, right? Like, you don't want to come into this. But how bad is it that he's like, yeah, I'll take this job in Toronto right now when they're at the bottom of the table and just hopeless, really?
And how bad that it took this long for Toronto as well? I mean, this is a lost season, and not just this season. I mean, depending on what they can do with Bernadeschi and Insigne's contracts.
Yeah.
Right. And the roster overall, and the fact that the front office is gutted and bare bones too. Now what for Toronto, Doyle? Like, what does Herdman inherit here? How does he affect change? How does he improve things now as well as medium long term? Like, where do they go?
Well, reporting right now is that he's not actually taking over until early October.
Okay.
So there's 6 more weeks until he takes over. What happens between now and then, I assume he'll have a say in it, but for whatever.
I assume.
What, 5 or 6 more weeks of Dunfield versus Insigne in the training pitch. Huh?
I mean, whatever happens over the next 2 months, it seems pretty clear that TFC, this roster, is headed towards another major teardown and rebuild, which is, I think, their third in the past 4 years or 5 years. It does not look good, right? I don't see, with other teams below the line, you can kind of see like, well, okay, here's the bones of something that makes sense going forward. And, you know, if this player develops and this Toronto team doesn't have that. They have a bunch of guys who are at or above 30 years old, who's, you know, by definition, their best years are behind them. And then a bunch of guys who are either super young and haven't developed at all, or are just kind of like journeyman, you know, mid-career MLS. So it's not a great roster.
Who would you build around? I'm just looking at the depth chart right now and trying to figure that part out.
The only person that's on the team that I would want to make sure is on the team is Jonathan Osorio. Outside of that,
You have to have it. Do you want to be on the team if you're Jonathan Osorio?
Yeah, it feels like at this point, Osorio.
He has, made his decision in the last contract negotiation.
Well, if he can make the money that I think he deserves to make for the career he's had, and he wants to represent Toronto and be in that city. Okay. So I think that's, but outside of that, there's not a single player that is a must in any way.
I mean, I think you have to plan for Jakeil Marshall ready to be a starter. You have to, given the hype that this kid had 3 years ago and the expectations and his talent, he has obvious talent when you watch him play. You have to figure out, okay, is he a winger? Is he a wingback? Is he a fullback? Well, he's going to start in one of those places going forward. He's
going to be in Scandinavia in 6 months.
I think you're right.
They're going to do what they did with Jaden Nelson, which is to get his value at its highest. He has to be on a different team, and they have to have a sellout.
That was the case with Jaden Nelson. This is not the case with Marshall Ruddy, right? Right. His value was much higher.
Well, they already tanked his value.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
But they tanked Nelson's value, too. And then they got rid of him so that they could recoup the value and try and flip it. That's why I'm saying, I think, I mean, legitimately.
Latif Blessing? Brandon Cervania is a solid, like, rotational central midfield piece to have on your roster. I mean, I'm looking around.
All of these guys are soccer players. That is correct.
Yeah.
No one outside of Osorio is a piece where you say, like, if someone came and offered whatever they want for Cervania and Latif, I think anyone involved with Toronto would say, sure. Yeah. Like, all of that
is
movable.
And honestly, they should. I love Latif, but, like, yeah. You have to be open for business about all of it. John Herdman's never managed a club team before. So he's jumping into the deep end. The GM is Jason Hernandez, who's well-regarded, but he's new at the job. As you said, the front office has been hollowed out over the past few years. Like, they had one of the most built-out front office staffs in the entire league 5 years ago, and everyone is gone except for Bill Manning. I assume Bill Manning still has the final say, right? He's the one who hired.
He must have hired Herdman.
Well, he hired Hernandez, and he hired Herdman. So, like, the buck stops there, I guess.
Which is wild.
It is going to be one of the more interesting teams to watch in this offseason, because we don't expect Bernardeschi or maybe Insigne to be back. So they'll have some open DP slots. They should have a bunch of TAM and GAM available. But given the track record, I'm not super confident that they're going to use it well.
And when you ask, like, who do you build around? I think you go to, like, all right, what's going to be the core? What's going to be the culture? And often you see coaches bring in their players. I don't know who John Herdman, I mean, Atiba hopefully gets paid at the end of all this.
If you get Eustachio and Jonathan David and Fonzie, then you'll be in good shape.
So, like, and Kyle Larin's not coming back to MLS right now. He's got a La Liga contract. So I don't really know what they're going to lean on and what they're going
to. I'm checking free agents on Transfer Market.
So yeah. While you're doing that, I'll tease Wednesday night's action in Major
League
Soccer.
Just give Atiba a DP contract. A DP Emirates.
So we go get Larea and Adekubi, right?
Yeah.
Just real quick, just make that happen. Atlanta-Cincinnati is probably the best match on Wednesday. That's 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Of course, you're watching on MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. There'll be MLS 360 as well as pregame shows for all of these and MLS wrap-up at the end of the night. Miami-Nashville also on at 7:30. That's a very good one. Austin-Seattle. Austin just trying to find something at home against the Sounders. They have 4 wins in 17 games. That doesn't seem great. My Houston Dynamo, the bottom feeders against the Columbus Crew. That said with all affection, complete affection, Dave.
No,
I know.
I think everyone knows because I've only said it 150 times on the show today.
Yep, straight into the ground.
Yeah.
I'll talk to Dr. Tom Bogert about that one. Columbus, hosting Columbus. That's a good one, too. And then St. Louis, Dallas. See St. Louis back at home, and maybe Joe Klaus gets the start. All right. Cali Classico. Sorry, San Jose and Galaxy. My bad. You're at the bottom of the list, and
yeah.
I'm not as good at a schedule read as David Goss is.
So. No, but Doyle made the point in our preview of, like, those two teams have not earned Cali Classico, like, status. It has not been a special matchup, which it should be and had been for 15 years when San Jose existed before that, because it's never been two playoff teams against each other. Like, forget talk about MLS Cup potential or favorites, forget Supporter Shield with the Goonies and then MLS Cups with the Galaxy. Like, they haven't both been a playoff team when they faced off.
Well, 10 years ago with the Goonies, right?
No, I'm saying since then. Okay. Since 2014?
12.
Yeah.
Since 2012.
Yeah.
Oh, because San Jose was bad after. Yeah. So, like, that's a really long time for this rivalry to sort of not become dormant, but it has fallen behind as other ones have also filled in with new teams coming into.
Well, thank you for letting me join your podcast, guys. I'll see you in a couple weeks. A little vacation to go on. So.
Wait, so you're not on Thursday?
No. I'll be headed to Kansas City. I have planes, trains, automobiles.
So when is the next time you're on extra?
I won't be on the next Thursday either.
It's like John Hurtman. He's on the 6-week flight. He'll be taking over again in October.
Yeah, I'll be back in October. All right. Right around decision day.
He's going to bring a sword that time just to prove how committed he is.
That's it. Enjoy Wednesday night. We will see you again. They'll see you again later this week. Adios. We'll be right back.